Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Hard Truth with myself, David Vance.
And Ilana Mercer. Hi there. Hi, David.
Hi, Ilana. Great to see you again. And I know we've been off screen for 2 weeks, so we've got extra Hard Truths to provide people with tonight. But can I say, if you're watching this, if you're listening it, the most important thing you can do to help Ilana and myself, subscribe to the channel. Hit the subscribe button. What you need to do is you need to support those of us in new media, like Ilana and myself. We're trying to give you the things that the legacy media are too scared to talk about. They're too frightened to talk about them. But we're not. And we're speaking simple truths, but sometimes they may be hard truths. So there we go. Right, Ilana.
True dissident media, because even the conservative media sometimes remove our stuff, right?
Which is shameful, but not unexpected, Ilana, unfortunately. You know, that's why these platforms like you and I have here, it's so crucial. And it's so crucial, the people who watch this, every one of you, or the people who listen to this, doesn't matter, you need to hit subscribe button, because that's how that's one meaningful way to help Ilana and myself get stuff out. So, Ilana,
help the truth get out.
Which is the most important thing, which is why we're here, really, you know. So, okay, so we got a bit of an action-packed itinerary to get through in the next 30 minutes, Ilana, 30 minutes to get through this action-packed itinerary. And at the top of the show, we agreed that we should talk about Justin Trudeau, the much-loved Canadian Premier, who's obviously standing for re-election because he thinks he might get back in. Maybe not. But anyway, an event happened in Canada. And I think, Ilana, we've got the video which we can play for those who are watching it. And if you're not watching it, we'll talk you through it. Fire up the video, please, if we can. Oh, no. Justin. Ilana, he was stoned. Actually, when I seen the headline, Justin Trudeau stoned, I thought, well, there's nothing new about that story. But actually, it turns out he was, wasn't he?
Well, I think he was just gravelled. It wasn't stoning.
He was gravelled. Yeah.
And previously, it was with pumpkin seeds. I'm not sure if they were organic, David, but if only it was a good old scene like The Life of Brian out of our producer's country, the brilliant Life of Brian by the Monty Python team, and then we'd have a good old stoning.
a good
old biblical stoning. But no, he was, but in his favor, he took it quite well, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing, but I've got a question for you. This is what I wanted to ask you. He's been touring Canada as best he can, and he's been met with what I would say is a fair amount of pushback from a lot of Canadians who aren't very happy with Justin, despite the fact that the media keeps telling us, you know, he's super duper popular, he's this towering globalist figure. And my question is, how come if he's so popular, he gets this reaction? And here's the second part of the question, how come that Mr. Joseph Biden, the most popular president there's ever been in the history of the United States, I've seen some crowds at American soccer games saying rather naughty things about him. So how come if they're so popular, the minute they encounter the people, the popularity seems to vanish? Why is that, Ilana?
I love your exuberance and your Irish positive attitude, but I'm a little bit more cynical about the people and about democracy and what it really means. I was under the impression the protest against Trudeau, although admirable, and certainly people came out in Montreal magnificently in the tens of thousands, I believe, against the vaccine mandates. But I think along the trail, it was quite small. I'm not sure if you have any information to the contrary, David.
Yeah. Well, the Montreal thing was huge. That was enormous. But then, I mean, you know Canada better than me. But I guess once you move out of the big population areas, maybe there's just not the people to protest, Ilana.
Well, I think in rural areas, they're more likely to be our people, you know. The cities are always the cesspools of progressivism. But I did, the conservative leader in response to what his name is Aaron O'Toole. I think he's as conservative as your conservative party.
Yeah, not at all.
On your side of the pond. But
yeah,
at least, David, he called this little outburst, this gravel tossing at Trudeau's mane, he called it political violence, and he said it was unacceptable. And I think to his credit, to this O'Toole's credit, were it happening in America, I think that if a POTUS was graveled or pelted with pumpkin seeds, an insurrection would have been declared. The city of London, Ontario, would have been cordoned off, and there'd be a house-to-house search. Thumbs up for the Canadians. They're pretty. They're almost apolitical and quite laid back. It's nothing like the surveillance, administrative state that America is. I think it's much milder, although it tries to be like America with all its might.
But fails. I mean, those times I've been in Canada and met with Canadian people, they do seem to be a milder version of American people.
Yes.
Perhaps graveling is about as extreme as it gets. I mean, I don't believe that anybody, you know, on a campaign should be encountering violence and anything like that there. I mean, that's wrong. But all the same, Justin Trudeau, a lot of Canadians don't agree with him. Here's a final question on this one, Alana. Do you think he will succeed in getting himself his majority? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, he called this election. I don't know if you know about it. He called this, it's a sort of election that he called. I'm not sure it's even due, but he called an election, and this is why the campaigning. And so immediately I think if he can do that, Israel keeps having elections. We never have referenda or elections here. We have them once every 2 years, of course, but we never have spur of a moment responses to crises. We just don't have that. Or do we have referenda, which to me are very important. And those, at least when I lived in Canada, I'm dual national. I'm an American, but still Canadian. My first port of entry to North America, I feel strongly and very.
Yeah.
I love Canada. We would have a very frequent referenda. So I don't know if he'll be elected. I mean, the man's an idiot. At least his father, who was an idol and an icon in his day, was not stupid. But we live in the age of the idiot, you know. So.
Well, you see, the thing is, he kind of fits a particular globalist pattern. You've got him. I mean, you've got Macron in France, you've got Johnson, you've got Andrews down in Australia, you've got Ahern down in New Zealand. There's a certain type of politician who seems to be sitting at the top table at the moment, Alana. And despite the fact the media tell us that they're massively popular, the impression I get is they're all widely unpopular. And it's a strange phenomenon of 2021.
Well, I think it goes to what democracy is, you know, with, with 40% of the vote or 48% of the, or 51% of the vote, not of the people, you can dominate the political scene. That's what democracy means. It just means that, the rest of the population, of your 49% of the people are disenfranchised or have no say. And even the people that vote for a Trudeau or a Johnson or Biden are not truly represented. Democracy means that the huge, lumbering deep state, back end state, really calls the shots. So that's where we're at. That's where we are.
Yep.
Where we are, bad English, where we are at the stage. So I think the protests we see are a result of such a bifurcated and split population that democracy creates. When you have a republic where the central government is responsible for very little, everything is decentralized, then you would get less of this, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we'll watch that space in Canada. It'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. But
certainly, David, props to the Canadians who took it in their stride, didn't declare this an insurrection, didn't go after the insurrectionist house to house, and just complained that it wasn't organically cultivated soil.
Yeah, this was organically cultivated revolution, Canada style. Yeah, it's as you say, yeah, kudos to the Canadians for not the sort of mega overreaction we would have got had it been, I suspect, if it happened in the States. Okay, let's move to the States then. This is our grand tour of all parts in between. So there was a story, Alana, which I've got in front of me here, which we talked about earlier today, and it concerns Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I wonder, your favorite. This is in your wheelhouse, David.
I'm such a fan of Dr. Anthony Fauci.
You don't want to be removed from YouTube for your heresy.
For the heresy of, I would always believe everything Anthony Fauci would say, because his track record points to huge integrity. But we do So can we please bring up on the screen for those watching? Alana. Oh my goodness, but I thought Dr. Fauci was as honest as the day is long. And now, internal documents further contradict Fauci's gain of function research denials. Were you as shocked as me when you read this?
Well, I was just wondering whether the media, the mainstream, the legacy media would even cover it. And the answer is a resounding no. I guess they would call this unreliable. I think the article we found was on Yahoo, which is obviously a liberal source, but it comes from via another liberal source, The Intercept, which Glenn Greenwald actually left. Glenn Greenwald, a magnificent journalist, liberal, founded it and left it because it was becoming so corrupt, in the sense, so illiberal and so not for free speech, which is what he stands for. I think this has been in Rand Paul has been onto the as cornered the discussion about Fauci and gain of function research. And yeah, the point is, David, you can explain what exactly they discovered with the Freedom of Information Act. The Intercept was actually, as Glenn Greenwald pointed out, Intercept was actually hoping to find the opposite. It wanted to exonerate Fauci. And even it had to actually, I commend The Intercept, which is has become part of fake news, for actually reporting the truth and showing this. And what is the truth? You tell us, David. You're on top of this gain of function.
Well, it seems to me that in a way this is news, and it's not news, because Rand Paul, as you rightly pointed out, Alana, he's been on Fauci's case with a vengeance over this. And, you know, Fauci came and he gave evidence under oath, and he declared that there was just no way that his organization had funded gain of function at the Wuhan virology lab. I mean, he's on record of saying that. But what this further demonstrates to me, Alana, is that, frankly, the good doctor, his memory seems to be failing him, because it's perfectly obvious from this. And this is what this is why it's not new news, though, that basically Fauci's Institute channeled all these millions, 3.1 million, to the Echo Health Alliance, which was the middleman. And the Echo Health Alliance then gave the money to the Wuhan Virology Lab. And they specifically, as we're just putting up for those watching, 600,000 of the total grant went to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. I mean, Alana, there's a lot of issues that in itself raises. So America specifically was funding gain of function in China.
And there's quite a few very respectable experts say, well, Dr. Fauci says this isn't gain of function. But there's no doubt that they were enhancing these viruses to make them, dangerous to human beings. There's no doubt about it. And quite a few experts are quoted in this piece that
I mean, actually, very specifically on that, the 3.1 million went to a project entitled understanding the risk of bat coronavirus emergence. Hello, that's it. I mean, it's perfectly obvious that through this middle institute, Fauci was enabling gain of function, which is a very high risk thing, which he knows, of course, is high risk. He dissembled in front of, when he was given evidence in the first time round. The media, sadly, won't touch this one because Dr. Fauci at this point in time is kind of untouchable. Yeah, he's tainted.
And I used to admire him during the AIDS, you know, the AIDS epidemic. He seemed to have been much less political in those days. Although the AIDS community, the HIV community said he wasn't fast enough, but they certainly did the proper research. They believed in patient zero. They believed in contacting. They didn't think in terms of stigma, you know, stigma and being politically correct. But these days, the other thing someone pointed out was that Anthony Fauci actually said that in one of these missives of his, he said that he believes in gain of function. And this is what makes him so a monster. No other words. He believes in gain of function.
Yeah. And I mean, I know I maybe said it flippantly, but, you know, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Mengele, at the end of the day,
that's what's called getting in trouble.
I've got big questions about Dr. Fauci because, as you say, rightly point out, though, Alana, the whole thing about gain of function is it really is Frankensteinian in terms of, you know, it's basically creating bioweapons that could potentially destroy humanity. And so, but I think, do you not think it also, like, it causes so much flux in the system? So the narrative at one point was, well, China's to blame, Wuhan lab, China, and China's, you know, then this has gone around the world, that being COVID-19. But it's not that simple, is it, Alana? Because clearly America and Fauci's Institute were also, you know, integral to that, what happened in that lab.
Intertwined. And I must give Ron Unz props here because he's written and he's always said that we're blaming China, but America is deeply involved in this whole. Mm. And the sad thing is that, you know, the Chinese, when they discover corruption, whether someone's embezzling or doing something not according to the books, they take them to the back and execute them. They do, their own politicians. Will there be accountability? The Republicans, whose ambitions seem to be nothing, they think they're when they get elected, they're supposed to, you know, the goal of a Republican politician to get elected is to go on Tucker, not to do anything, right? Of course, a commission, and they want commissions and invest and all these posturings for the camera.
That's the point. Yeah.
And we know that a commission, David, is where things and accountability go to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's
so there'll be no accountability. There'll be no accountability.
Which is to say, Alana, you've touched on this. This is one of my problems. So in this case, Fauci is obviously, as they say over here, bang to rights in this one. But I can tell the Republican Party is not going to be good. They're not going to go after him. They make noises. I've seen the token noises, the token gestures. But that's all it's going to be. You know, because to my mind, because they're just as bad as the Democrats. Apart from Rand Paul, I don't see really any other drive or enthusiasm.
But, David, aren't they worse? That's why I always say GOP, RIP, they're dead to me.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Aren't they worse than the Democrats? Why? Because so ineffective. The military arm of the Democratic Party, Black Lives Matter, removed one of the heroes of America. If you study history, Robert E. Lee, praised in England at the time, not for slavery, but for his principled position on states' rights, not for slavery. He was not pro-slavery. When it came down to it, he said, do I fight for the Union? And he was offered a very good commission. Or do I fight for my family, for my kin, for my people? Mm. And he made his decision. Now, this is a immensely, an amazing man. And his statue was finally, any vestiges of him and his legacy have been removed.
Yes. Yep.
To the whooping and atavistic screeching from joy of barbarians. So the Democrats are very effective. What do we have in the GOP? Nothing.
No. I agree, Alana. That is part of the big problem, that it's just a void that makes tokenistic noises whenever it wants, but nothing will come of this. So one other thing, by the way, I just ask you this one. Why do you think that when Trump was in the White House, why did he let Fauci stay in place? Why did that happen?
By the way, I just was, you read my mind. We always do this. Trump did stop the gain of function research.
Yeah.
Do you know if it's been renewed? That would be interesting.
I think the pause which Trump put has been removed now. So whilst it's murky, the action that Trump did take, I think, mm-hmm. is now gone by the by. So
everything, I mean, the borders, yeah. Gain of function is back. The funding probably is back, but Trump, when you look at what's happening under Biden, you really do think, well, at least Trump did quite a lot. He did quite a lot. And so he definitely removed, he prohibited this gain of function and the funding to the Wuhan Virology Institute. He definitely did do that. And your question
He didn't take Fauci down, though, did he? He didn't take Fauci down.
No, you know, he was ultimately, I think, I wish Ann Coulter would come on and speak to that. She's led the Truth Commission on Trump, but I think he was he had this core of truth. When he gets up on the stump and he's speaking to the people, you just hear what we want to hear. Then there's always the showman. He wants the fancy people. He wants to be accepted, and I think he just wasn't at all, and he listened to the rotten family of his. Now they've infiltrated the worst part of the family are on Fox News, et cetera, et cetera. But anyhow, he brought in the family, and the family wanted always to save face and to look good. And I think Fauci was part of the armament, you know, the cool look that he still cultivated.
Yeah.
I'm smiling because I'm thinking of the Bleach episode. Oh, I miss Trump.
Yeah, I think we all do. And I don't know. Well, he may have come back, Alana. Stranger things have happened at the moment. I mean, the thing, I have pretty much a lot of contempt for the GOP as such. I've got a lot of respect for the MAGA movement, so yes. Which is something that's probably not fully understood here in the UK, for example. I think it's just seen as one big, homogenous blob, but it's not. It's so not. MAGA is the thing I relate to as a Brit. If I lived in the States, I would be a MAGA person.
You are a MAGA. You're a universal MAGA. You're a contrarian, but...
I'm a contrarian by nature. Well, yes.
You cannot be tamed. You cannot be tamed. But David, the MAGA movement has been hijacked.
Oh, I know. But this is the problem about politics in general, Alana, and democracies in particular, which is something we should really do a special program on, I think, the major issues that a democracy brings. Because at this point in our history, which actually is something I wanted to bring on, we have a little bit of time left, and I was going to say, when you look at history, and I love history, I love reading about it and understanding what's happened in the past, and you've written a really good article, which I wonder if we can bring it up on the screen, please, if we could just, this is from Alana's Berlia blog, and you see there, outsized and excessive in every way, the immorality of the empire and its military. And there's some wonderful lines in that, Alana, but I particularly enjoyed the references back to the last days of Rome, which is something people don't want to hear sometimes, but it's a hard truth people need to face into, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually I quote Cullen Murphy, who wrote a magnificent book, Are We Rome? And it really is a magnificent study of a dying, the consequences of American power all over. And he writes, imperial overreach is the idea that one's security needs, military obligations, and globalist desires increasingly outstrip resources available to satisfy them. And in this blog post, usually my blog posts always amalgam into columns, I point out the emotional, the sickening treacle-like emotionality that comes with the military soldier, with the empire soldier. I cannot relate, and this is what I was trying to, maybe our wonderful producer can point out the misery. I brought the Whitaker family, an inbred American family, living today in the Appalachians. This is what we have. The picture, this is what we are confronting. There's so much misery, and our military men are fawning and rushing, bringing all their resources and their special skills and the tough talk. It doesn't speak to me. I can't empathize when these are the people that are living amongst us. Poor people.
Invaded
in mass, and America is just festooned with untenable suffering. There's untenable suffering in America, and here we are, our big macho men going to bring all the Afghans, hundreds of thousands, and they're all wonderful. I'm sorry, it does nothing to me, because, you know, David, as libertarian-minded, the military is supposed to protect the homeland and the homebodies. The homebodies or the homeboys, whatever you want to call it. Homeland security. And if our military had any a moral core, en masse, they would disobey orders, head to the border, and head to help these poor people who languish everywhere across our country.
And you see, that's where I did want us to talk about this, because I completely agree. And I see the same from a UK perspective as well. I don't want our military going around the world. I want it protecting British borders, which are, unfortunately, they're not as, the problem isn't as bad in one way, in absolute terms, but in relative terms, it's still bad, you know. And so, yeah, so the military should do it. So I thought it was a wonderful suggestion you made. If they really were following the right instincts, they would be saying, we're going to defend the homeland. That's what we want to do. That's what warriors would be. That's the point of a warrior. Not, as you say, some of this incredible virtue signaling that we're seeing going on from the military.
It's not necessarily misplaced compassion, but it's so overwrought. It's so excessive. It's so part of the empire, the empire's soldier. The typical day in and day out on Hannity's show is this: Americans behind enemy lines, hostages, and then you have these tough men crying over people who went to visit relatives. Apparently they're Afghanis with American passports, American citizenship. Believe me, it's not difficult for certain people to get citizenship. It's very difficult for people like myself, but or yourself, you. And the emotionality, tripping over themselves to display, as you say, to virtue signal, who's raising more money to go to, you know, to on a commercial flight to get an airplane and go and lift these people with no visas, without anything. Where's the reservoir of emotionality? I don't have that in me. I really feel for the people around me. Maybe I'm naturalized American. Maybe I'm not American. Maybe I'm not properly American. Maybe I'm not a patriot. I feel for the people around me.
I see, the thing is, Alana, I think we do live in the last days of Rome. I really do, metaphorically speaking. And I see the whole of the Western civilization, it's weak, it's rotten, it's lost its purpose, it's... And actually, you know, again, in a strange way, and I'm no fan of the Taliban, far from it, but they at least want to they look upon Afghanistan as their country. Their interest is Afghanistan and what they want to do in it. And I contrast that with what I see here, you know, in the UK, and I see what I see in the States. And I just think to myself, it's the dying days. I remember visiting a part in Croatia. Is a palace which was built in Croatia around about 420 AD. It was the last palace built by a Roman emperor, and it still stands today. You know, but but at that point, the Rome had overextended. It had got rotten. It had got corrupted, and then it was fit to be invaded, and it collapsed. And I see that happening here. Maybe that's a hard truth people don't want to hear, but I see it in front of my eyes. Do you?
Absolutely. And I think, that's a topic for a different discussion. Yeah. Why is it so pronounced in the Anglosphere, in the Anglo-American sphere? It's particularly pronounced. Even Macron, you compared him to Trudeau. Macron's very intelligent. I mean, I think he has a PhD in philosophy. He's not unintelligent, which Trudeau is an imbecile. But, you know, he occasionally reverts back to his... French art, French monuments. He vowed he would never take them down. And you see that sporadically, not so much in Germany, maybe in Bavaria, you know. West Europe is certainly corrupted, but still not as bad as the Anglosphere.
It's the Anglosphere. No, you're right, Alana. It is. You look at Australia, look at New Zealand. Look at the UK, look at Canada, look at America. There's something, and we need to do a separate show on it, I think, but there's something very toxic and very self-immolation going on. And it is very disturbing. Well, Alana, we've got to the end of our allotted time schedule, and we managed to get the topics that we wanted to talk about.
We made it.
We made it. So, look, all that it remains for us to do is, first of all, thanks everyone who has watched this or who has indeed listened to it, which way. Thank you on behalf of Alana and myself for your support. And Alana, of course, thank you, and look forward to being back with yourself next week, same time, bringing more hard truths out there, folks. Hope you enjoy all this. Catch up with you then. Thanks so much. Bye, everyone.
Bye.